This is ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. They say good things come in threes.
Cause it's one, two, three.
Time to test that theory. Here is RP3, D'Lo, and Mesh.
We can't stop being on the road. No show.
When are we not at this point?
No show loves being away from the EFCO Development Studios more than we do. We got a special show lined up for you today. Yesterday, we were out Farm de Alley for the Redbird Ministries Golf Scramble, which was a great success. Appreciate everyone that helped make that possible. Today, we're here in Baton Rouge. That's right. We traveled across the basin. It was safe. No worries. And we're going to be here not only for our show on this special edition of RP3 D'Lo and Mesh from Plucker's Wing Bar right here on Nicholson. You can see Alex Box Stadium right from the parking lot. And, of course, Tiger Park right there as well. We are going to be here as well as the Jordy Holtberg Show live back-to-back right here from Plucker's Wing Bar on Nicholson. So we got a tremendous lineup for you today. We got not one, not two, not three, not four, five guests on this special edition of our show. And we'll get to that a little bit later. But first of all, I'm joined here at Plucker's by the man who has 2 degrees, the son of Iceman, a producer extraordinaire, and a great scratch golfer as well.
Not even close.
Dawson Iserloh, who took part in the scramble yesterday. You guys did well.
Yeah, we swung it all right. You know what I mean? We, finished right in the middle of the pack, which is where we were aiming for. We don't want to be first. We don't want to be last. We'd have rather been first, but we weren't good enough to do that. So finishing middle of the pack was an approachable goal, and that's where we were, so we're all good with that. But
I also heard you were very kind and helpful for our buddy Matt Miguez, who was part of the four-man scramble. He said that you gave him some real tips to help his game, and he actually golfed pretty well.
I really tried. And, you know, again, I did teach a golf class back at FSU in my grad school days.
Oh,
it was, again, just kind of for beginners, letting them – I'm no golf coach
golf
by any stretch.
Golf 101.
But, you know, I could see some things. And if you're someone who can't swing the club, I can get you to where you're hitting the ball. That's at least – we're not going any farther than that, but for Matt – some of those things helped him out, and it was a good time.
It was a good time
had by all, and it's a great cause as well. So
there it was a great cause. So we had fun out there, and of course, you already heard him chime in. The man with the best head of hair in sports talk radio in the states of Louisiana and Mississippi, producer extraordinaire James Mesh is here as well. Good day, sir.
Good day. I'm starting to get used to not having to be on the board every day. it's been quite a stretch.
Someone's getting spoiled.
Yeah, right.
someone's enjoying being out of the studio. We got a jam-packed show for you today. We've got five guests. They're going to be all in a row. This is our rundown. We're going to have our guy, the man who's won more LAB awards than they've ever made. Essentially, they're just going to rename it after him. Our buddy from After for the Review, Matt Moscona, is going to bat lead off with us. He's going to come up and join us in about 10 minutes from right now. Then after that, how about former Westgate High star and LSU superstar Jared Mitchell is going to be swinging by live in person. Then we're going to close out hour number one with the LSU softball coach, Beth Tarina. She's going to join us. They have a huge game tonight, RPI-wise, against the Louisiana Raging Cajuns. Remember, this is the first of two back-to-back weeks of Cajuns and Tigers facing each other. They'll be doing the same thing next week over in Lafayette there at Lampson Park. But tonight it's going to be at Tiger Park. We'll have Beth Tarina on to talk about that matchup and as well as the Tigers season in softball. That's how we're going to end hour one. Hour number two, Ryan Terrio, former LSU star, two-time World Series champion, is going to join us, talk about his career, and he'll give his thoughts from a player's perspective about what's going on with Jay Johnson's team this season, the year after winning the national championship. That'll be that. And then 12:15, the voice of the Tigers, Chris Blair, will join us to talk spring football game. We'll talk baseball and everything else. So those are the five guests we got lined up for you today on this special edition of RP3 D'Lo and Mesh live from Plucker's Wing Bar here on Nicholson, right down the street from Alex Box Stadium. But let's start off today's show like we always do at this time with today's specials.
The fellas can't help you with your lunch plans. But They can serve up the top stories of the day in bite-sized pieces. Order up. Time to order up today's specials on RP3, D'Lo, and Mesh.
And I'll start it off with the gridiron, of course. We didn't get to it yesterday because it was an absolute jam-packed show, but over the weekend we did have LSU spring football, and you know, with spring football, there's never too much you can get out of it, but there's a couple of notes that you can make here and there depending on what happens, and we'd seen it. Of course, LSU, they do a little bit different. Of course, some other teams do that as well, where it's not just the first team offense versus the other team's defense or vice versa. They did more of a scoring system for the defense, and in case you're wondering how they did it, it was more of a if the defense gets a turnover or a turnover on downs, they get 7 points, basically a touchdown. Then if they force a missed field goal, you get 5 points. If you get a pass breakup, you get 2 points. And then if you get a sack or a tackle for loss, you get 1 point. So there's a scoring system to base on how the defense kind of performed throughout the day. And, of course, more looking at the offensive side, you are kind of curious, since you move on from Jaden Daniels, how is Garrett Nussmeier going to look? We saw a little bit of what we could see in the bowl game last year, but kind of curious to see how has he developed coming into it. And, of course, it's kind of hard to tell when you're having to go against a defense that's still trying to adjust and make with a whole new defensive staff, as well as you don't want to show too much, especially to your first opponent in USC once we start the season. So, of course, they're going to play more vanilla defenses, some cover two, some cover three, maybe throwing a blitz every once in a while. But you are kind of curious, how does the offense look, especially since you move on from Jaden Daniels at quarterback, you move on from Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas at wide receiver. So you are kind of curious. But Garrett Nussmeier, he looked pretty good. He looked very comfortable, had a good command of the offense, no issues throwing the ball, absolutely, of course. He is a gunslinger for the most part. And he had finished the day 7-for-7, 187 yards, and 2 touchdowns. And, of course, those 2 touchdowns came on deep balls. Of course, the first one was to Xavion Thomas, the Mississippi State transfer wide receiver. He had a 45-yard touchdown where he kind of just ran past everyone on a cover two, and it was no issue. Of course, Garrett, he had to step up in the pocket and then just kind of threw it to a wide-open receiver. And then the other one was to Kyron Lacy for a 59-yard touchdown, and he had 2 catches on the day for 102 and that score. But throughout the day, the team was able to get chunks of yards throughout, and it didn't look like there was much of a difference. And then I think for me, since Jaden Daniels moved on, you were kind of curious, what does the running back rotation look like for the most part, since that's a big chunk of your offense that's gone, especially in the run game. And one guy that really stood out to me was Caleb Jackson. Of course, you had seen him every once in a while on special teams, or maybe in a blowout, you would get him a carry or two. And he looked pretty explosive, and he looked really good on the day. Of course, he looked really good going north and south. There wasn't a lot of going side to side, which was a concern from Brian Kelly, but he was going a lot of north-south, and he ended up getting a 32-yard touchdown. And then, of course, you are kind of curious what Aaron Anderson looked like. And he got a couple of gadget plays. He got a couple of plays where he was specifically the first guy that Garrett was going to look towards. So that's another guy that you could look at that is going to have a bigger uptick in production compared to last year. And then, of course, with the defense, it's kind of hard to tell what you can expect from them, since they are running a lot of vanilla defense and you're not running crazy coverages or running a lot of blitzes. But for the most part, one guy that really stood out was Gabe Relaford. He ended up getting 2 sacks and 3 tackles for loss. So he had quite a bit of contribution to the defense being able to get a couple of points on the board. Of course, it ended up being a 34-34 tie. But for the most part, not too much to take away from, but there is some encouraging signs. I still do worry about the tackling, because LSU always has trouble tackling at certain points. Sometimes they make weird arm tackles, or they try to go for the shoulder, even though it's like you don't have the leverage for that. But for the most part, it looked encouraging. The offense still looks good, and we are going to have to see what's going to happen as we get into fall, but still some good signs overall.
My special for today is Angel Reese, and she went to the perfect team, and in particular, the perfect coach. She was selected number 7 overall last night in the WNBA draft. She goes to the Chicago Sky. Number one, she's not their top overall pick, which I think helps her with her transition, because they took, with the number 2 overall pick, South Carolina's Carmela Cardoza, and then they took Angel at 7. So the Sky have decided not to be one of the worst rebounding teams in the WNBA, and they got 2 of the best in the entire country, and Angel definitely is the best. She is a savant when it comes to rebounding. Her big question mark, and probably the reason why she fell a little bit, is because she can't shoot. That's not being mean. Okay, that's just being real. She knows how to make layups, and she can rebound better than anyone else in the country. The shooting's not there. She's going to have to develop a little bit of a jumper, even if it's a little baby jumper from 6 feet out. She's going to have to develop that a little bit. Here's the thing. She's not going to have all the pressure of being the franchise savior. She doesn't have to even come in there to be the face of the franchise or anything like that. She's part of what they're trying to rebuild there in Chicago. And being paired up with one of her rivals in the SEC is amazing. They're going to be physical, but it's the coach. She's going to go play for Teaspoon. And for any of y'all out there that are listening that aren't aware of Teresa Weatherspoon, let me tell you something. One of the greatest basketball players the state ever produced. She was phenomenal at Tech. By the way, she was coached by Kim Mulkey, who was an assistant under Leon Barmore during those days. She is tough as nails. That's how she played the game. That's how she played in not only in college at Louisiana Tech, that's how she played in the WNBA, that's how she played overseas. And that's the type of coaching we heard Pelicans guys, Zion and others, talk about how much they enjoyed when Teaspoon was on the staff, helping them get prepared for the season, pushing them, making them better. She is a tough-nosed coach. And that's the thing that I think Angel probably needs, just like Kim Mulkey was able to push her to another level after being so great at Maryland. She took it up a level at LSU. Now she gets to go to the WNBA. She doesn't have to be the savior. She can have time to develop, and she's going to have a coach that is going to push her to another level. Like, she got pushed by Kim. Teaspoon is built the same way. And for Angel Reese, I know some people on social media, they were upset. Oh, wow. She should be a top five pick. She should be a top three pick. And, you know, I know a lot of LSU fans were expecting, hey, maybe she could go, you know, be the highest draft pick we've had since Sylvia Fowles went number two overall almost a decade ago, or a little over a decade ago now. That didn't happen. She went seven, but it went to the best place because now Angel Reese gets to be coached by her second straight Naismith Basketball Hall of Famer, by the way. And that's going to help her game and improve her game. I think it's a perfect landing spot for her. She doesn't have to be pressured. She's not going to be stressed. And she is going to be pushed, developed, and coached by one of the best to ever do it in the state of Louisiana, just like she was at LSU.
And for me, I'm looking at a really intriguing non-conference softball matchup tonight that's going to be taking place in Baton Rouge. Involves a couple of the teams we covered. The Louisiana Raging Cajuns taking the trip to take on Beth Tarina's team, who we will hear from later in today's show. Massive for RPI for both teams, really. And it's interesting because LSU had a tremendous start to the season. We talked about it. They won their first 20 games of the year. They were constantly, you know, overachieving in some ways because there were a little bit of a mixed expectation group for this group coming in. They've slowed down in SEC play, as you may can expect. The SEC, one of the best conferences in softball, as they are in baseball as well. And now they have a 10-8 record within the conference. They're in fifth place, and they've got some big series coming up against some teams that rank even higher than they do. So it's an interesting one where the Cajuns, obviously we know the story. They started off the season pretty slow, specifically slow by their standards. Had the massive win over Oklahoma, kind of springboarded them back into contention. They've won almost every Sun Belt game they played since then, 14-1 record, and last week was their biggest weekend of the season, taking 2 of 3 from a top 20-ranked Texas State opponent. So Jerry Glasgow's team comes in back in the hosting conversation with an opportunity to boost their RPI. And when you look at this game from an RPI standpoint, that's where it gets really interesting. The Cajuns are ranked 17th. Tigers are 4th. They'll play twice, once here in Baton Rouge, once in Lafayette. It would be more beneficial for Louisiana to win the game that's on the road. We know how that influences the RPI and how much of a boost you get from it. And if they find themselves in that top 14, top 12 range by the end of the season, then they will be in the conversation to host games. For LSU, the interesting thing is they're still in the conversation to be a national seed. They're ranked 6th in the polls but 4th in the RPI. If you win the majority of the rest of your SEC series, you're going to stay right where you are, maybe even go up in the polls. So you would definitely have a great chance to be one of those top 8 national seeds. We know how important that is to not only host the regionals, but to try to host a super and basically make the road to Oklahoma City run through your own park. So both teams need it badly. Both teams want it. It's also a great rivalry. Rematch of a regional final from a year ago. Cajuns were able to do it, take them down twice, even though after they fell into the loser's bracket early in that tournament. So always great when those two get on the field together. We've seen some really competitive matchups, and I imagine tonight is going to be more of the same with some interesting different implications this time around as opposed to when they played in the regular season last time. That's also our poll question of the day. Who do you have in that matchup? LSU, UL in softball tonight. Pretty simple. Pick one or the other. We'll be updating you on that throughout the remainder of today's show. We have to take a timeout, but Matt Moscona of After Further Review will join us right afterwards. This is RP3 D'Lo and Mesh.
You're listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. Your home for the Houston Astros.
Welcome back in to RP3 D'Lo and Mesh as we broadcast live from Plucker's Wing Bar here on Nicholson, just down the street from Alex Box Stadium in Tiger Park. Hey, want to let you know about some great things that they're doing here at Plucker's. They get a new sauce. All right, Bregman's Creole Crush. You got to make sure to try that. I think I'm going to try that for lunch today. Sports trivia every Tuesday at 8:30 with, of course, friend of the show, friend of the station, Hunt Palmer, at the Nicholson location only right here. Also, general trivia every Wednesday, 7:30 at Blue Bonnet, 8 o'clock on Nicholson. It's Taylor Swift theme this week, so I know James Mesh is excited about that. So is my daughter. She's 9 and obsessed with Taylor Swift, which means I'm now obsessed with Taylor Swift as well. Today's drink specials are $1 off Mexican bottled beers and margaritas. Also, interactive NFL draft party is going to be next Thursday on the 25th. Drink and food specials for all 32 picks. And then, of course, Plucker's Wing Bar here on Nicholson also has Major League Baseball extra innings package. Fans of any MLB team can watch their favorite teams all season long. So make sure, if you're in the BR area, stop by Plucker's Wing Bar here on Nicholson. We now welcome on our first guest. He's batting leadoff. Combined, him and RP3 D'Lo and Mesh, we have won a combined 13 LAB awards. It's a magnificent haul by the three of us here at this table. It's our buddy from After Further Review, the legend. They're just going to name the LABs after you. It's Matt Moscona.
Plucker's trivia tomorrow, Taylor Swift. My wife, biggest Swiftie in the world. Well, let me rephrase that. The biggest Swiftie I know.
Okay, there right, we go.
I'm sure there's someone out there that's, but in my world, biggest Swiftie. I am thinking I might actually take her and her friend, who's the second biggest, join forces.
Yes.
And win some gift cards.
Call. There you go. There we go, bud. That's what you got to do. That's
right?
What you got to do.
I mean, people forget you go do this trivia, you win gift cards. And they got Pluckers and Amazon and all different kinds. I'm like, let's go.
Oh, yes. We've
somebody else pay for something for a change.
We've educated ourselves on Taylor Swift in the household. We've become fans because of our daughter. So she loves her. So let's start off. I want to start off with spring football because it just wrapped up on Saturday. And, look, you've been doing this long enough. I've been doing this long enough. You really can't take a whole lot away from spring football, right? It's and a lot of times glorified 7-on-7. They're not tackling, and we know that the new DC and his staff, they're not showing all their cards, right? But after you saw all the practices that you saw for Brian Kelly in year three, entering year three of the program, do you feel any better about interior defensive line now that spring football is over, or do you still feel like they got to go get a guy in the portal?
Ooh, no, they still got to go get a guy in the portal, maybe two. It was interesting going into spring because – guys, the biggest problem, too, is they should have numbers,
yep.
Right? I mean, you moved Kimo Makanaoli from the offensive line over to defense, and he was taking reps with the ones. Like, that goes to illustrate just how thin they are at that spot. So, look, it would have been great if you'd been able to get either Mason Smith or Makai Wingo to return. It didn't work out. Both those guys are going pro. You wish them well. The one thing I'll say if you're looking for a reason for positivity around the interior defensive line, Jacobian Guillory is a fifth-year player.
Mm-hmm.
Jalen Lee is a fifth-year player. They're bringing in Gio Pius from Wisconsin. He's a sixth-year player. They're looking at Philip Bleedy from Indiana, who they offered, who is a fifth-year player, who is also married with two children. They're bringing in adult humans, and they have adult humans on their defensive line, which – the physicality, for anyone who knows, you were just more physically developed at 22, 23, 24 years old than you were at 18 or 19. So maybe some of that, just having older players on the defensive line may be a benefit to them. But I don't know. I'm going to have to – they're definitely going to need to fortify numbers. I'm just going to have to wait until the fall to see it.
I want to talk about wide receiver because from what I can see from a distance, it looks like Kyren Lacy, the former Raging Cajun who came over, it feels like he's developed a good rapport. He has really good chemistry with Nuss. And look, Nuss has got a cannon. That cat is not afraid to throw into triple coverage, right? I mean, he believes in his arm. And it looks like him and Kyren are on the same page,
and
which is great. It kind of reminds me a little bit of when Jaden came and he was developing that rapport with Malik instead of Kayshon Boutte, right? And but you're going to need more than just one guy. Did the spring kind of settle for you who the number two and number three wide receivers are for this team entering the fall camp?
If there's a spot where I have no concern whatsoever, it's receiver. It's and it's so weird to say, too, because the offense, like, you lose your OC that was a Broyles finalist, you lose your Heisman-winning quarterback, and you're losing two first-round receivers. And we're all like, oh, they're going to be good. They're fine.
It's no amazing. Worries.
But it really feels that way. I mean, a lot of it just feels like guys that had to wait their turn. Like Brian Thomas. Remember, Brian Thomas didn't, in his first two seasons, didn't have over 400 receiving yards. And then, boom, when it was finally his turn, there's 1,200, leads the country in touchdown receptions, he's going to be a first-round pick. So, like, I look at a guy like Chris Hilton, and I see that similarly. Aaron Anderson was a five-star. They love him in the slot. The two transfers they brought in, you know, C.J. Daniels was a 1,000-yard receiver at Liberty, and he's a big physical guy. And Xavion Thomas, they love him in the screen game. He caught a deep touchdown on Saturday. I mean, we haven't even gotten to Shelton Sampson, who was a five-star a year ago, who's probably your six on this team. So receiver is not a problem, but you know, point out Kyren. He was the talk of spring ball because they needed – you need that alpha that's going to replace the two guys you lost, and it was his opportunity to step up and do it. And we were out there practices, guys. I mean, Kyren just took over practices. There was one scrimmage we got to watch last week when the first offense went against first defense. Kyren caught – they had a sack on first down. They run a screen to him to make up the sack yardage. It's third and 10. He goes down, gets a ball low and away at the sticks. On the next play, deep ball about 30 yards downfield, double covered. He high points the ball. The two defenders fall down. He runs down to about the five-yard line. Like, they just couldn't handle him. And, I mean, maybe that's because the secondary is still LSU secondary. But at the same time, man, like, I'd be more concerned if they weren't, you know, doing that against that defense.
I want to ask you about the baseball team.
Why?
They're at home tonight. They're at home tonight against the UNO Privateers.
I want to ask you about a root canal, Ray. Why would you do that to me?
It feels like, and I mentioned this a couple
weeks
ago.
Tell me about your prostate exam, Ray. That's what I want to talk to you about. That's what we're going to go to next.
It feels like Ole Miss last year. It feels like Mississippi State from 2 years ago, winning a national title with a veteran group. And just not being able to kind of figure it out the next season. Did we undervalue the impact? We so focus on Skeens and Cruz because National Player of the Year, best pitcher in the country, right? Top two picks in the Major League Baseball amateur draft. But you could argue, did we undervalue the impact and the leadership of Dugas and Beloso and Morgan as well?
Yes, absolutely. I think in the comp to State and Ole Miss, it makes sense because there's teams that won the national championship and then missed the SEC tournament the next year. The big difference is if you go back and look at their championship seasons, both of those teams were in danger of missing the SEC tournament, and they got hot late, got in, and went on a run. LSU was dominant last year, and so it was natural to think, okay, that's gonna continue. You wouldn't have this fall, but you know, you lose seven of your eight everyday regulars, and guys, the biggest problem is some of the guys that you'd hoped who were on the team last year as role players that would step up, haven't. You know, we thought Jared Jones could have an All-America type season. You know, you look at the guy like Josh Pearson, who was so good in the postseason, and he's regressed to now being about a 230 hitter. Like, those are two guys right there that I could have seen, you know, Pearson as your leadoff guy, Jones as your three-hole hitter, you know, mashing 25-30 homers this year, protecting Tommy White, and it just hasn't manifest that way. And I think that's been the biggest thing is guys who were on this team and got to taste that championship last year and were expected to take that baton haven't.
We're speaking with Matt Muskonov after further review. Matt, this will be maybe a little bit more fun to talk about, but not that much. New Orleans Pelicans, they're going to play in a game tonight.
You guys got some doozies today, man.
I mean, hey, it's what's current, right?
I know, you're right. You're right.
Their season, not on the line, but certainly not where they wanted to be, facing a Lakers team tonight that just handled them at home to finish the season when you had even more on the line and the ability to avoid that situation. I'm more fascinated with what Willie Green does with this small ball lineup. I think it's clear that he's been playing with a deck of cards that's not his favorite with Valanciunas all year long, and that's why I'm more surprised they didn't move him at the deadline. What do you make of it and the chances of them to try to defend Anthony Davis and LeBron and company tonight and kind of reverse a little bit of what they couldn't get done at the end of the season?
Do y'all want them to lose tonight?
Well, I just don't think you can approach it with the idea that losing's okay, because the next matchup could be a Golden State team that's, kind of trying to give one last run at it.
Yeah.
So I understand that the idea of playing OKC is way better, but I don't think either team can afford to have that mentality.
Well, I think it's sort of like you look – and I agree with you. You're right. I mean, you're not going into this – as a player and a competitor – you're not going into the game tonight thinking, okay, let's lose, so then we'll play either Sacramento or Golden State, and then we'll get OKC. But as a fan, I'm going, okay, let's lose tonight, so then we'll get Sacramento or Golden State, so we can play OKC. Like, that's how that's the most appealing scenario, because, man, if you win, I mean, your ceiling is your floor. You get to play Denver, and then you know how that series is going to end. It's just a matter of how many games, right? It's all elementary at that point. So, I mean, hindsight's 20/20, and it doesn't do any. You can't cry over spilled milk, but God, you had a game on your home floor with an opportunity to beat the Lakers. You're the sixth seed. You avoid the play-in, and you get Minnesota, which is a winnable series. Instead, I'm more like, how do you bounce back from that, knowing what you have ahead of you now? I mean, it's interesting. I know the Pelicans are 1.5-point favorite tonight. Like, it got bet to the Lakers and bet back to the Pelicans, which it's like the stinky line, which tells you probably go with the Pelicans tonight. But this, when I look at the season series, and sometimes they'll say in boxing or MMA, styles make fights. And sometimes that happens in other sports as well, and a team's just a bad matchup. You mentioned the size. So, I could have looked at the game in the in-season tournament in Vegas as just, okay, well, the Pels were a young team that had a couple nights off in Vegas, and it didn't go great for them. I could understand when you lost by 40. And then the two regular season games, each team won on their home floor. So it's like, okay, these pretty evenly matched teams. So you had them at home on Sunday thinking, all right, go get it done on your home floor. And to get beat the way you did was just so disappointing. So I don't know what my expectation is tonight. I'm going to watch with hoping for the best, but not really optimistic right now, which is such a bummer considering where we were two seasons ago when we thought they got the play-in, they won the play-in, they got in, they lost to Phoenix, but we felt, okay, this is a building block. And here we are now 2 years removed. It doesn't feel like you're in a much different spot.
And we're coming up on a break, but I did want to get your perspective on it quickly. What changes the outlook for you on having a successful season here? Is it getting to a series, whether it's against Denver or against the one seed, and bringing it to six games? Or in that situation, do you still think this is underachieving no matter what happens here?
The only way that I would look at this season is because you've already missed the play. Like, all year we talked about, okay, avoid the play-in. Be in that top six. That all year, and you had an opportunity, game 82 on your floor against the Lakers, and you got punked. So the only way that I look at this now and saying, okay, it's successful, is if you make another step, and that next step is you have to go win a series. And that's not happening against Denver. I don't see – I guess anything can happen. I mean, hell, we saw the Heat last year as an 8 seed make the finals. But I don't see that happening. So, man, the only way that I would look back at the season and say, yeah, it was a successful season, is if they – get into the playoffs and win a series. And I think the only way realistically that happens is if you lose tonight, win on Friday, match up against OKC, and somehow win a best of seven.
Matt, appreciate the time, man.
Okay,
enjoyed
guys.
It. And it should be quite a day.
It was pleasant for you. We got to talk LSU baseball and Pelicans. You're very happy now. You're welcome.
Jerks. Give me a beer. I need a beer.
We got to take
some Breggy wings.
We got to take a timeout. When we return, how about a guy who won national championships in both football and baseball? Was a first-round draft pick as well in Major League Baseball. And Westgate High star, Jared Mitchell, is going to be joining us live here as RP3 D'Lo Mesh broadcasts from Pluckers Wing Bar on Nicholson, just right down the street from Alex Box Stadium. You're listening to ESPN Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.
You're listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles. Your home for the best local sports talk in Southwest Louisiana.
Welcome back to RP3 D'Lo and Mesh as we broadcast live from Pluckers here in Baton Rouge. And, of course, as a big LSU show, we first had on Matt Moscona of AFR to talk about those LSU Tigers. And let's continue that conversation as we bring on a former player. Of course, he started at Westgate And then he moved on to LSU, playing both baseball and football. He ended up being a two-time national champion in both sports, then went on to be a first-round pick with the Chicago White Sox. Of course, we have on Jared Mitchell on the program. How you doing, Jared?
Fellas, appreciate y'all having me, man.
Oh, appreciate you coming on, especially live here. I'm kind of curious, especially starting off with the Westgate. You started off there, and then you moved on to LSU. Mm-hmm. Was that kind of always a goal for you to just stay in state and go to the dream school?
I wish I could tell you, yeah, no, that wasn't the goal. The goal for me was, honestly, I wanted to play both sports in college. It really came down for me between LSU and South Carolina. I'll never forget having Coach Spurrier in my house, and we had great conversation. There was nothing wrong with the conversation at all, but every time the conversation left football, it got brought right back to football. And I remember thinking when they left, I was like, there is absolutely no shot they're going to let me play both there. So at that point, the decision became really easy for me. It was like, well, it's LSU for sure. So that's really how the decision came down to it for me. And I'm forever thankful that I made that decision because it was the right one for me.
And then, of course, the fact that you did play football and baseball at LSU, you still also had to balance also being a student athlete as well. So what was that balance like, having to deal with so many priorities at such a young age?
Yeah, I mean, at that time, so I was so used to doing those things, right? Like, I grew up switching uniforms in a car, going to from a soccer game to a football game, going from a football game to a basketball game, going from a basketball game. So I grew up doing stuff like that, so it really wasn't anything super different for me. Now, mind you, when I got here, obviously you play sports, obviously you have to do school, you're doing all this stuff, and it's all in one, and there really isn't much time off, but it didn't really hit me. It didn't really hit home until I get drafted. I go and play pro ball, and I come back in the off season, and there's just so much time. I never had this much time in my life before. So it's, you know, I get up and I get my workout in and I'd be done. And next thing you know, it's noon and I'm like, I got nothing else to do right now. So that was probably the first time for me. I was like, what was I doing in college? I don't even know how I did that because I had so much time at that point. But before that, I didn't see it as anything different than what I'd always done.
And then, of course, when you were playing football, you had Les Miles as your coach. What was that experience like? Because we know that he's a little bit of a weird guy. Of course, yeah. He always ate the grass, yeah. And he clapped a weird way. It was like, yeah. What was that experience like with him?
I think I got a different experience than probably people from, like, the 2011 through 16, 17, 18 era got, if mm-hmm. that makes any sense. Because when I showed up at school, Todd Monken was still the receivers coach. When I showed up at school, Jimbo Fisher was still the offensive coordinator. Bo Pelini was still the D coordinator. You had all these guys who went on to do successful things at other places that were very demanding and commanding type mindsets. So it was the quirky Les Miles, obviously it was there, but you also still got all of everything else that you saw from these other places when they went and did successful things elsewhere. So it was there was a whole bunch of guys that were still – recruited by Saban, obviously coached by Miles. So, like, there was still so much of a mix of those mindsets there that I got there, and it was kind of, you know, you kind of got both, and you kind of got a sense of, all right, let's how do we stay on the straight and narrow, but also we can, you know, hear these things and see all these other things too.
We're talking with former Westgate High star, two-time national champion at LSU, first-round Major League Baseball draft pick, and now a man who works for the SEC Network. We'll get to that as well. Jared Mitchell joins us here on RP3 D'Lo and Mesh. Jared, what was it like being on that 2007 football team? Had two losses, right? Lost the game against the triple
lost.
Threat of Arkansas.
We never lost in regulation.
There it is. Right? There it is. What was that season like for you guys to have that loss against Arkansas, but then the door opens for you in the SEC title game against Tennessee? You got a little help because West Virginia inexplicably loses to a terrible Pitt team, but that's how college football works. What was like being part of that national title team?
You got to remember, we had two opportunities in my mind, right? Like, we had the Florida game here that year, yeah. Where USC had taken a loss. We beat Florida. We go to the number one team, and I want to say it was the week after or a couple weeks after, we go to Kentucky. And we ended up losing in triple overtime. So that was deflating as a team because we kind of saw a clear path to getting to the SEC championship, to getting to a national championship opportunity, and we lost it. So then that all happens. You build it back up. You start playing well. And then you get Arkansas to come in here, and they beat us in triple overtime as well. And then things don't kind of open up again until that loss, like you said, by West Virginia.
Yep.
So it was a crazy year. There were some ups and downs. There were some inexpected things that kind of happened. But I do solely believe that team was so driven. That team was so full of absolute dudes all over the place, and it was there was just so much chemistry there. It was a really fun experience. We had a really great year, and we were able, obviously, to hold the trophy at the end of the year.
2009, you guys win the national championship in baseball. Was there a turning point during that season where you yourself and your teammates said, you know what, we got something special here. We may be the best team in the country.
There was two turning points. The first one, honestly happened in 08. It happened the year before after the Georgia loss. Because you got to remember, when 09 came, we lost, I think, our whole rotation. But a lot of the guys that were stepped up to be in the rotation in 09 were on the team in 08, right?
Right.
So they were a part of that team. But in 08, when we lost to Georgia at home, that day that started the 23-game winning streak is when that team kind of realized this is our potential. So you flash forward to the next year, it was already kind of the thought process on the whole team, like, hey, it'll be a shame if we don't go out there and actually get this thing done. We're way too talented. We have way too many guys back. There's just way too much here for us not to get it done. So that would be the first part. The second turning point, which had nothing to do with the players and had a lot to do with the coaching decision, and it was just a bunch of players that finally said, you know what, we don't really know what this move is, but we'll just hop on board and go with it. But you got to remember, there was at one point we still had, before we lost, after we lost to Tennessee at home in a series, we still had DJ LeMahieu playing shortstop. We still had Ryan Shemp playing second base. We still had Leon Landry in left field. And we still had Austin Nola on the bench. After that weekend, we decided to take the freshman Austin Nola off the bench and put him at shortstop. We decided to move the number one shortstop in the country coming in, who has also played every game since he's been there for the year and a half, off of shortstop and move him to second base, where he's never played in his life. We decided to take Ryan Shemp and move him to left field, where he's never played in the outfield. And we decided to take an eventual third rounder in Leon Landry, who had 9 homers on the year, and put him on the bench. That was the second turning point that for that team, if you ask me. And those two things kind of just propelled us, and we took off from there.
You go on, you get to the College World Series, you win the whole thing, you get named the most outstanding player. What was that like for you to be so locked in to play at such a high level and to help your team win a national championship and then be honored with it by essentially being named the MVP?
You know, I was able to come up in some decently key moments that I was able to actually deliver in, but truth be told, just me being able to deliver in that is not the full story, right? Like, we don't get to maybe this game three if we don't have DJ LeMahieu's double, two-out double in the – forget what inning it was, late in game one of the College World Series Finals. Like, there were so many other opportunities by my teammates to set up these opportunities that happened that I don't get to that spot if those guys don't perform in those spots. And that's kind of the story of how the whole year went. It's so easy to look at either one person and or the performance of one person in a game or over a season and be like, you really killed it. But you forget that you got those opportunities set up by guys getting on in front of you, set up by guys being able to take care of stuff behind you. That way you get opportunities and people pitch to you in situations. So a lot of that was set up by the play of our entire team. I just happened to be the benefactor, kind of the thing.
Spoken like a true teammate. I get you out here with this. And now that you're doing analysis work and you're working for the SEC Network, by the way, congrats
appreciate
on that,
it.
Brother.
Thank
that's
you, man.
A well-deserved opportunity for you. From afar and being a former player, when you see this year's LSU baseball team play, what's wrong?
So I felt like coming into the year that it was going to take this offense some time to get going. I mean, like, let's be honest. How many guys in that pretty much everyday lineup and or around the pretty much everyday lineup was in the lineup every day last year? I got one guy.
Correct.
Tommy White, right?
Yeah.
We can't really say Jared Jones because we didn't see him for the last month and a half, maybe even a little more this season. We can't really say Travinsky because he literally wasn't in the lineup until the last month and a half until he went to Ole Miss, right? And he hit the pinch hit homer there. Can't really say Travinsky. We can't really say Milazzo because he was not in the lineup early in the year, even though he's been here for some years. There's only one guy that played every day, especially last year, and you can kind of say over their career here. So I knew, I don't care what you have coming in. I don't care what you have. It was going to take some time for those guys to gel, for those guys to go through their lumps, for those guys to start feeling comfortable and get to the second half of the year. Now, what we didn't expect is you have so much talent, right? The pitching staff is literally probably second or third after last week in strikeouts in the league. But they're also leading the league in walks. That is a dead giveaway on how to give away runs and how to give away games. And I think over this time, what they haven't been able to do is learn how to grind through and find ways to win games. That's what good teams do. Bad teams find ways to lose them. And that's kind of where they've been. And we can sit here and say how much talent there isn't, whatever you want to call it, but you are what your record is, right? And the only way you can change that is to change your record. Now, the season's not dead. We know what talent's there. You still have an opportunity to go turn some things around, get yourself into the tournament, get yourself into the postseason, but you got to go and do the work, right? And there is, you've left yourself little to almost no error to be able to get to that spot. So I'll be interested to see kind of how they respond and kind of how they finish out this thing, but I can't say that I expected them to be here record-wise because I expected the pitching to kind of carry them a lot more early on.
Jared, appreciate it, man. Congrats on the gig with SEC Network,
man.
I know you're going to kill it just like you did on the gridiron and on the baseball diamond. We got to take a timeout when we come back. LSU softball coach Beth Torino will join us here on RP3 D'Lo and Mesh as we broadcast live from Plucker's Wing Bar here on Nicholson in Baton Rouge.
Go sign up for our rewards club at ESPNSouthwestLouisiana.com so you can score tickets, gift certificates, and much more. This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Welcome you back into RP3, D'Lo and Mesh. We are live from Plucker's Wing Bar here in Baton Rouge. We're going to have coverage of a couple of big-time LSU sporting events tonight. One of them, the one I will be at, is the LSU Tigers hosting the Louisiana Raging Cajuns, a rematch of the regional final from a year ago that took place in Baton Rouge, and we now have on head coach Beth Torino of the Tigers. Beth, first of all, thank you for making the time for us today.
Well, I'm glad to have you out to the park tonight. That'll be fun.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. And you know, I wanted to start with a little bit going back to where the way this season started. It was fantastic for you all. Went obviously a long time without losing a game. And it's not to say that the schedule wasn't tough because there were some big-time non-conference matchups in there as well, games against Oklahoma State, Washington, among others. But since you've gotten SEC play, I know you suffered a tough injury there with Danica Coffey at one point as well. And now 10-8, still in a good position there, fifth place in the league. But what's it been like, kind of the swings of how great the start was and then, of course, hitting some adversity but now trying to fight back through that?
Yeah, I think the SEC is just kind of a gauntlet run, you know, and I think it's tough to keep your team just mentally tough, mentally, you know, alive, right? Like they just get fatigued by seeing good pitching day in, day out, over and over and over again. So I think just trying to find ways to keep their confidence up. You know, for the first 24, they thought they were invincible, even though they really weren't, you know. So just getting them back into that mindset, I think, is where we're trying to be.
Right, and you know, you mentioned the gauntlet that is the SEC, and obviously having played teams like Missouri and A&M, who are top 10 in the RPI and top 10 in the rankings, as well as Florida and Auburn right there as well. There's no breaks. You know, you'll play a Cajuns team that's top 20 in their own right, and then it's right back to a top five ranked Tennessee team. So you kind of mentioned it a little bit already there, but how difficult is it when you don't really have many opportunities to take a breath once you get to that conference portion of the schedule?
Yeah, there's definitely no rest for the weary, you know, just having to turn around after an off day and play, you know, one of the best teams in the country this afternoon too, you know, so definitely are thinking of ways we can kind of recharge this team without having a lot of time to do it. You know, played a good Auburn team this weekend that, in my opinion, is one of the best pitchers in the country. And then, you know, alongside her is a kid that was a freshman of the year in the SEC a few years ago, you know. So, I mean, everybody has somebody great. Everybody has something, you know, that you're going to have to deal with. And like I said, it becomes a gauntlet, and you just have to figure out how to weather the storm and, you know, come out stronger on the other side.
We're talking with LSU softball coach Beth Torino as we are here live at Plucker's in Baton Rouge. Coach, I want to talk about tonight's matchup because you have to play a historic game against the Cajuns, a team that's just so good and just so close to you as well. What's that like being able to always iron sharpening iron type of sense?
Yeah, it's really, really a special day, I think, for the state of Louisiana and just softball in our state. And I think when you look around the state at the great programs we have right now with McNeese and, you know, Nichols, Southeastern, Monroe, like, have all come in and given us great ball games. So I think, like, the state of softball in Louisiana is just really strong, and tonight will be another great example of that.
Yeah, and then, Coach, also just looking at tonight matchup-wise, I mean, where do you think y'all are better at than the Cajuns, while where you might struggle against Louisiana?
That feels like a loaded question a little bit there. I think it's going to be a tough matchup. I think they have great pitching. I think, you know, they have two really good pitchers, right? They have Sam Landry. Then they have their left-hander, too, which, you know, our lineup is full of left-handers. So I think that'll be an interesting matchup for them, too. So I know they have two strong arms on the mound and then a ton of experience in that lineup. When we're looking down the lineup, you know, I see a ton of familiar names, players we've seen for multiple years. So they have a veteran lineup the same as us. You know, I'm sure they feel the same way looking down our lineup, like, when is Taylor Pleasants going to graduate? When are we going to be done with Sierra Briggs? You know, our team has a lot of veterans in the lineup, too.
Well, Coach, we appreciate your time as always. Thank you. Good luck this evening, and we'll see you out there.
Great. Glad to have you guys in Tiger Park. So hope you're wearing purple.
That's LSU head coach Beth Tarino. We have to take a timeout here. Hour number one is complete. We'll be right back with hour number two live from Plucker's Wing Bar.
This is ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. They say good things come in threes.
Cause it's one, two, three.
Time to test that theory. Here is RP3, D'Lo, and Mesh.
Welcome you back into RP3, D'Lo and Mesh here. Hour number two has arrived. We are live from Plucker's Wing Bar over in Baton Rouge. Been an LSU-centric show, and that theme will continue here throughout the second hour. And to start off hour number two, who better to have on than Ryan Terrio, the former LSU great, former major leaguer as well. Ryan, thank you for making the time.
Not a problem, man. Appreciate you guys having me.
So, you know, look, we just talked with Moscona in hour number one.
Oh, God.
He said we have to talk about LSU baseball, huh? He was not too happy, not too excited to do so, but obviously we're going to start the same way with you here.
Yep.
You know, you had the unique experience of being on a national championship team in the next year, you know, kind of living through that, where you've already accomplished that ultimate goal one year and you have to try and reset and refocus it. What about that specifically is so difficult to do?
Well, I mean, look, I think in college it's extremely difficult. You know, you see it on a professional level. You know, the repeats and the three-peats that don't come around very often. But from a pro standpoint, you have the benefit of guys locked into multiple-year contracts. You know, the challenge you're facing now in college sports with NIL and the transfer portal. Man, you could have a totally different team. You look at LSU women's basketball, same thing. They, you know, they're playing in March Madness with two players from the previous team, you know, that were on that one. They're saying that they're repeating national champs, but they're really not. You know, I mean, it's different. It's a different ball club. So I think LSU baseball suffered from a little bit of that. You know, that we didn't necessarily have to do that in 2001, following up the national championship. But you've got a different cast of characters. You've got a group of guys that aren't familiar with each other, and you know, the portal is a crapshoot, and I think we're kind of seeing that play out in Baton Rouge.
You know, what's been interesting to me about it, and it's not to say that Jay Johnson suggested that it was going to be easy or that he didn't think there was going to be issues with this, but what surprised me is how surprised it seems like he is at times when you hear him in press conferences, like he's searching for answers, and there's a lot of things that hearing him talk preseason and into the early portion of the year. It just doesn't seem like he thought there were as many deficiencies as there ended up being. Do you think that's an example of a coach who's just super confident in his process? Or do you think he's now starting to realize, maybe I needed to come into the season with a different approach, knowing all the guys we lost and you know, tried to piece it together with the ones we brought in?
Look, Jay and I are very close and talk quite a bit. And so I can say that from a talent standpoint, you know, I don't think he was as far off or is as far off as the record shows. You know, I do believe there are guys that can play baseball. There's pitchers that can get outs on that team. From a culture and mesh and team standpoint, it's just a variable that is hard. It's hard to put your finger on when you're getting a kid out of the portal. In high school, look, man, you're talking with the parents, you're talking with the siblings, the high school coach, his friends, you know, you're vetting that player's personality and how he's going to fit into your system and culture and scheme. The portal, you don't have that luxury. You're recruiting strictly on stats. You know, what did player A do at his previous school? Oh man, we could use him. Let's throw him in the mix. So it's tough, man. It's tough to recruit that way. You've had Paul Skeens and Dylan Cruz. Their talent on the field, a dummy could see that. What I think we're discounting now, or we have discounted, is the effect that those two guys had in the locker room. The game of baseball has so many variables in it. We'd be sitting here all day long talking about how certain things can affect a win and a loss from the first inning or from batting practice, whatever it may be. But the one variable that I will never discount is the way players interact in the clubhouse from a team standpoint. I've just been on too many teams that were uber talented that couldn't get out of the playoffs. And the flip side of that, teams, you know, both in college and the major leagues that weren't as talented but had rings on at the end of the year.
Well, and that's, you know, kind of the theme I want to go with here for the next one for you. It's a team right now that's not in a great spot, but based on the strength of schedule, based on it being the SEC, they're not that far off, and it wouldn't be a stretch for them to get right back into this thing. And we always hear about playing your best baseball at that time of the year. What is it for a team that allows that to click? And it could be as simple for them as taking a series here and starting to just relax and go, we're still that team, we're still those guys. What can allow that to click and kind of turn for a team like this?
Well, I think number one, personnel change is going to be important. You know, I think giving some guys some opportunities. We saw it last weekend from the pitching side. You saw some young arms get in there, get some big outs. You know, I know the Tennessee series didn't end up the way that we would have liked it to have. However, you saw some younger guys get some meaningful innings and that did their job. You know, so from the pitching standpoint, I think you're starting to see that offensively. You know, there's three or four freshmen that I really like. Now, can you win the SEC and win the national championship with multiple freshmen in the lineup in this day and age in college baseball? I don't know. But you can damn well get some really good experience. And as you look for the future, you know, there's just at-bats and situations that you can't put a price on.
We're talking with former LSU national champion, star. He was also a two-time World Series champion in the big leagues. You hear him on Fridays with our buddy Matt Moscone on After Further Review. Ryan Theriault joins us now. I want to talk a little bit about, you know, you mentioned mixing things up, right? Mm-hmm. Changing the personnel. And I floated this idea out here before because I saw the young man in high school, and Gavin Guidry was one of the best shortstops I have seen at the high school level.
Mm-hmm.
And we know what they do over at Barb High School.
Sure.
And how many stars they put out. And they've put him into this role, you know, put him into the bullpen, right? And that worked out really well last year. He came up big, especially in Omaha. And on the way there, does Jay even think about taking a former nationally ranked high school shortstop and putting him back into that position after being in the bullpen for as long as he's been?
You know, if you'd asked me that question 2 months ago, I wouldn't have said no. I would have said hell no. You know, if we can't recruit competent shortstops to come down and play on this team, you know, on not only starters but also on the bench, that's what they do, then we're going to be in trouble. But at this point, you know, I don't know. From the outside looking in, I would say no chance. I mean, the guys, you know, last year his way to get on the field was through pitching. He did a heck of a job. And, you know, to just take that time off, you know, defensively it might not be that much of a stretch. But, look, you're seeing 95 to 100-mile-an-hour heaters, you know, every day. I don't know how many at-bats the guy's gotten. I don't know how many swings in the cage he's gotten, you know. So that's a tough thing to do, to just throw him out there in the middle of the SEC and say, go get him. You know, I would have to imagine there's somebody else, there's other guys, you know, that could do that. You know, I know Milam was in there. I really do like Milam quite a bit. I think he can play all over the infield. You know, I don't know that he's your solution at shortstop, but I know he can play, gives you a heck of an at-bat. I would have loved to seen Gavin, you know, get some opportunities last year just, you know, as the season went on. I know this fall he did.
Right.
And so there was kind of called a tryout, but you know, they had four or five guys out there, and he was one of them. So I don't know, man. I don't know what to tell you on that one, but I think it would be tough.
You mentioned, you know, they're missing the leadership that, say, Skeens and Cruz provided. And we talked about this with Skona earlier, and I've mentioned it before on the show. I think we, as media folks and as people that follow the team, we knew it was going to be tough to replace the Golden Spikes Award winner, right?
Sure.
We knew it was going to be tough to the most dominant pitcher in the country and the 1-2 combination in the draft. I don't think, Ryan, we understood the value of Cade Beloso,
sure,
and Kevin Dugas and Trey Morgan and those guys that had been in the program, yep, for 3, 4, 5 years, had seen the ups and downs, knew when not to panic, right, when, yep, things start going wrong for you in a game or even in a series. And they got so many guys that we thought were going to rise to the occasion based on a small sample size of them being starters last year, but they weren't starters for a full season. The only one that was Tommy Tanks.
Mm-hmm.
Is this what we're just seeing as just a team that's having to replace, what, 8 guys out of
everybody,
their lineup?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, look, you hit the nail on the head. When Jay got this job, we had a conversation, I would say, hours after it was announced. And my message to him was, this place is different. You don't grow up in Louisiana dreaming to play for the Yankees or the Astros or the Braves. You grow up in Louisiana dreaming to put on the purple and gold. That's the major leagues for a kid from Barb or a kid from Broadmoor,
yeah,
or a kid from Catholic High in Baton Rouge. You know, when you put on that Tigers uniform, that's the big leagues. And so my point to him was, hey, man, like, you got to have those guys. They don't have to be your stars, but you got to have them. You got to have Gavin Dugas. You know, that's a wonderful point. You know, you're asking Hayden Travinsky to hit in the middle of the lineup in the Premier League in the country. He hasn't done it before. You know, he's been injured, and we've seen a small sample size. That's a tough ask for Hayden. You know, now you're protecting Tommy Tanks, right? Go get him. You know, so that's not an easy thing to do. Yeah, discounting that leadership, you know, is a mistake. And yes, you hit the nail on the head. Those dudes are important. And the good news is, though, I'll tell you this, you've got a good group this year of young, you know, local-type players. Next year, you've got the same thing. You've got a group of guys coming in the 2024 class that is as good, if not better, than I've ever seen. And it's a lot of homegrown talent.
I mentioned with Skone earlier, you know, is this LSU team this year trending in the direction of what Ole Miss did last year in Mississippi State the year before, losing a veteran squad, winning the national title, and then the next year you're struggling and you don't even make it to a regional, right? You're under 500. I think this team has more talent than last year's Ole Miss team and the team from Mississippi State 2 years ago. And he brought up a good point that those two teams – weren't dominant throughout the season. They got hot towards the tail end of the season. Do you think Jay and the talent that they do have on this roster could get hot here in the last month of the season and make a run in Hoover to put themselves back in a position to being an NCAA regional team?
So a couple things are going to have to happen, you know, and I mentioned this earlier. I do think offensively there's going to have to be some sort of personnel change. I think the kind of the guys that we've seen thus far are who they are. And you cross your fingers that the dudes that may get an opportunity here shortly can be the guys that get them over the hump. So that has to happen. And then secondly, Thatcher Hurd needs to be Thatcher Hurd. You know, mm-hmm, he needs to be the guy that we saw last year. The stuff is there. Look, this isn't new. This is the same thing that happened last year. If he can catch fire the same way he did last year, then I would 100% say yes. I mean, you've got 3 guys that are going to be starting games that can beat anybody. But to me, he's the X factor, you know, pitching-wise. He's got the most experience and pitched in the biggest games. But, yeah, I mean, there's going to have to be a little change there.
We'll get you out of here with this. Brother, what was it like for you in your big league career? You got to win 2 World Series championships, and you get to do it with 2 different teams who just so happen to be rivals. And mm-hmm, as someone who lived in Central Illinois for 6 years, I can attest to how feverish that rivalry is between,
yeah,
the Cubby fans and the Cardinal fans. What was it like for you playing for both organizations and winning a World Series title?
You know, Chicago, you know, drafted me, obviously, and gave me an opportunity. And, you know, it was home, truthfully. Prayed to spend the rest of my career there. You know, I wanted to be a one-team guy, and you know, it didn't quite work out that way. The trade from Chicago to L.A. was a bit of a shock and surprise. We really didn't know that was coming. And truthfully, it kind of hurt. You know, I had so much invested in that city and with those people, and loved Chicago, loved Wrigley Field and the fans. And you know, it was more than just the Cubs. It was the city. You know, and so I'll forever be grateful for those guys for giving me an opportunity. That being said, you know, without that trade, I don't have two championship rings. St. Louis, I'll say this till the day I die, Tony La Russa is the greatest baseball mind to ever walk this planet. Was able to play with, you know, my opinion, the greatest right-handed hitter of all time, and Albert Pujols in that era. You know, Yadier Molina, just unbelievable leader. You know, St. Louis was amazing. So both cities – you know, we're great. I would have loved to have been on the team that broke the curse in Chicago. We used to talk about that in the clubhouse all the time, because we were pretty dang good in 06 and 07 in Chicago. But yeah, it was wonderful. And then San Francisco, same thing with Bruce Bochy. He's like right behind Tony. You know, Bruce Bochy is amazing. But those are two teams I mentioned earlier. You know, like San Francisco wasn't super talented, but you want to talk about a strong locker room. I mean, it was just a bunch of dudes that loved each other and wouldn't accept no for an answer.
And I love what you said there. Both of the titles that you won for with teams that had great skippers, it matters.
Oh, yeah.
It matters. Ryan, appreciate you making the time, brother. I know you're having a blast also coaching your son, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Playoffs cranking up next week. So
there it is.
Yeah.
Best of luck to you, man. Thank you for making the time, brother.
Appreciate you guys having me.
Hey, just want to let you know, reminder, we're out here at Plucker's Wing Bar on Nicholson, and they got some great stuff that I need to tell you about. How about Breggy's Creole Crush? It's a new sauce. You're going to love it. I'm going to try it later on today. They have it right here. Sports trivia every Tuesday at 8:30 with host Hunt Palmer right here at the Nicholson location. Also, general trivia every Wednesday at 7:30 on their Blue Bonnet location, 8 o'clock right here on Nicholson. It's Taylor Swift theme this week. By the way, I've been educated about Taylor Swift by my 9-year-old daughter, so I think I could do pretty well there. Also, today's drink specials are $1 off Mexican bottled beers and margaritas, so stop by and take advantage of that. And they'll have an interactive NFL draft party on next Thursday. That's the 25th, first round of the draft. Drink and food specials for all 32 picks. And they also want to let you know, hey, they got MLB Extra Innings package here. So fans of any Major League Baseball team can come and watch their favorite teams all season long. So come by, stop by, check out Plucker's Wing Bar here on Nicholson. We got to take a timeout when we come back here on this special edition of RP3 D'Lo and Mesh. The voice of the Tigers, Chris Blair, will join us right here on ESPN Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.
You're listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station and your home for the LSU Tigers.
And speaking of those Tigers, obviously it has been an LSU-centric show as we are live from Plucker's Wing Bar here in Baton Rouge. We'll be out. A couple games we'll have coverage for. We mentioned it, LSU taking on UNO in baseball. The LSU softball team taking on the Louisiana Raging Cajuns on the softball side of things. A couple interesting matchups there. And we now, to talk further about them, have the voice of the LSU Tigers. Chris Blair joins us. First of all, Chris, appreciate you making the time for us.
No problem. Good to have you guys in Baton Rouge, and appreciate all you guys do for LSU. So the least I could do is come here to a great place and grab a little lunch on my way out.
Absolutely. So it's been kind of the joke of the day, having to talk about the LSU baseball team. Matt Moscona wasn't too excited to do it, but we made him do it. And now I'll ask you some of the same questions. From you, you know, you've seen it all year long. The beginning of the season, which was, you know, some real excitement. The non-conference slate was handled pretty well. And then you get into the SEC portion, and things just took a turn. For you, did you notice a turning point, or was it as simple as you got to the grind of the SEC and that kind of showed you some things?
You know, I think in the early part I was kind of surprised at the pitching, not because, you know, a lot had been talked about the depth and the number of arms and hopefully the talent that would be there. But I thought, you know, I didn't think it was lights out. I didn't think the starting pitching was lights out outside of Luke Holman, who I thought got off to a great start. But the bullpen was concerning even in all of those wins they were racking up. But the one thing that really started to concern me, when it comes to pitching, the number of free passes. You know, you were seeing over a weekend 16, 18, 20, 30 strikeouts, but you were also seeing, you know, 12, 15, 16 walks and two or three hit by pitches. So that was a little concerning, even while you were racking up wins. And then offensively, they just weren't putting a lot of runs on the board. And again, when you get to the SEC, you know, this early part through the first three weekends, I think LSU was averaging 4.7, under 4.7 runs per game. All you need to do is look at an SEC scoreboard on any given weekend. Four runs, five runs, that's typically not enough. I mean, the offenses in this league are used to putting up 8, 9, 10, 11, and more. So I think that was concerning. Now, again, not that I was looking into the future that LSU would lose the first five series in SEC play consecutively, which goes back, as I'm sure everybody knows, to 1977. That's been a while. But that was concerning. So, you know, I think they're still trying to find that right rhythm, that right combination in the lineup. I mean, look, we've had a number of guys. I don't know if everybody who's played offensively for LSU, they've been in a different spot at some game or another. There's a couple of positions that have been three or four guys. You know, they've tried to find the proper leadoff hitter. So I still think there's a lot of questions. Is there talent on this team? I think so. Have they been able to put it all together in one package in a consistent manner since the start of league play? Well, obviously not.
You know, and it's funny because it is baseball at the end of the day, and we spent a large portion of the offseason talking about Wake Forest and LSU, who had that great showdown in Omaha, and then a lot of people thought they're going to be right back where they were a year ago, and we're going to get that round two. Both teams have kind of had similar struggles. Now, Wake's been able to figure it out a little bit better in ACC play. But I asked the question, you know, expectations. It's different. LSU always has expectations, right? And, you know, winning the College World Series only adds to that. And then you get a preseason, either number one, number two ranking. Do you think the pressure has set in on some of these guys who maybe had roles but weren't the guys a year ago?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what you're looking at. I mean, Tommy Tanks, you know, Tommy White at third base, your only everyday guy. Hayden Travinsky had a final, you know, month plus of the season that was incredible from a hitting standpoint. But that's the only guy that was there wire to wire. And there were guys who came in and contributed. You can go down the list of guys on the roster right now who had big moments in that incredible postseason run. But the fact of the matter is now they have to do it every single day. And I think there is some pressure there. And I think now that you've gone half through the SEC schedule without a series win, you've been run ruled twice. I mean, anybody who knows anything about competitive athletes knows that the pressure is there now. You know, and I think you can subside some of that pressure if you can start to win. Now, look, first six series in SEC play, four of those on the road. There's not another team in the SEC that had that schedule, which I joke. The SEC office in Birmingham has a magic computer that does these schedules. There's no human influence at all, we're told. But they got a pretty rough draw. And not to mention of those first five SEC series, I mean, three at the time were in the top 10. So they've played a tough schedule. But that's what it means to be at LSU. I mean, you're going to get that. When you play in the SEC, you're going to get a tough schedule every year. But I think now that you turn the page, you go to the halfway point, look, Missouri's playing much better than they did early in the season. Alabama comes off a good performance against number one Arkansas last week. It's not going to get any easier. But I think if you can start to string some wins together, I think you can take some of that pressure off. And then the confidence starts to build, because that was the big difference to me in the 22 team that made it to Hattiesburg and lost to Southern Miss is the confidence that rose for that team last year. There wasn't anybody in the country beating them. And then when they lost in Omaha and had to win three straight to avoid elimination, there was no doubt. I mean, I was around the guys, was in the team hotel, and there was not a worry whatsoever. That team was able to perform because of that. This team has not yet figured that out.
You know, and I wanted to ask you about some of the difficult decisions Jay Johnson has had and is going to continue to have as far as trying to handle the lineup, trying to find some stability in the rotation, as you mentioned, you know, past the first couple of guys. And I found it interesting, you know, last year, let's say a guy like Christian Little has a ton of struggles. There comes a point where they were kind of done letting him try to figure it out. And it was, you know, we'll worry about Christian later. But we've got guys who we're relying on right now. For you in this group right now, how many of the players who are struggling do you think they're going to continue to roll out there and try to have them figured out? And then how many do you think Jay says, you know what, there's a freshman who needs a couple more at-bats here. Maybe I give him a chance. there's a guy in the bullpen who can maybe give us a couple more innings because, you know, guys like Thatcher Hurd, they're just not figuring it out right now.
No, I think that both sides of that you're going to see. I mean, we saw it a little bit this weekend because you go back to Tuesday's midweek game. You got a great performance out of Cam Johnson, who, again, has all the talent in the world. He just needs experience. He needs opportunities on the mound. Samuel Dutton had not pitched in an SEC series up until that point. And Aiden Moffitt, who is right now, you know, throwing 97, 98 miles an hour, also had not pitched in SEC play. And we saw all three of those in game one on Friday night, which outside of LSU's defense booting the ball around, you're talking about a 3-1 ball game. You're talking about a tight game late, and eventually they lose 6-3. But it wasn't a pitching issue. It was a defensive issue. And, again, lack of offense. But, you know, talking to Jay last night on his weekly radio show, I kind of asked him the same question. And, you know, on Sunday in the lineup, you had three true freshmen. You had Milam at second base. You had Jake Brown in right. And Ashton Larson, who I think is maybe the biggest silver lining this team has had, he hasn't seemed to blink at all stepping up from high school and prep baseball to SEC play. He batted 363 this weekend, made four sensational plays in right field. And I got the sense talking to Jay that you're onto something. And I think we're going to see a change in who he goes to first out of the bullpen, starting this weekend on the road at Missouri. And it won't shock me at all to see Aiden Moffitt, Cam Johnson, Sam Dutton, even Kate Anderson, who we saw a little bit on Sunday. I think he's kind of made that declaration. Look, you guys had the first half of the SEC to kind of get it together. Haven't done it yet. We're going to go to these other guys who are hungry and, frankly, are the future of the program. And I think you'll see the same in the lineup. I'll be shocked again this weekend if we don't see a lot of Jake Brown, Ashton Larson, and, of course, Milam, who's pretty much been an everyday player. The one guy I think that, to follow up, you mentioned who might continue to get opportunities. I think they still have a belief in two guys, really. Nate Ackenhausen, who started on Sunday, didn't pitch great but didn't pitch bad, and also Thatcher Hurd. Thatcher's a guy that when he's on can be very effective. We saw it, obviously, at the end of last year, but he has struggled mightily this year. But I don't think this pitching staff or Coach Jay Johnson has given up on him yet. So I kind of expect to see him tonight. I don't expect to see anybody very long because they want to have all arms ready this weekend. But I think Thatcher and Nate Ackenhausen are going to be two of the regulars. But I think you're going to see a lot of the newcomers get a lot more innings moving forward.
We're talking with Chris Blair, voice of the LSU Tigers. Of course, you hear him quite a bit on this station as well. Chris, I want to move over to football. And I know that the spring game had just wrapped up. And it's also hard to kind of tell what to take away from since there's not a lot. There's a very vanilla defense. You usually don't run too much on offense as well. But what kind of takeaways did you take away from that?
You know, I had a chance to watch the game in Knoxville because our game was later. And it was, you know, it was interesting to see. I saw a few practices in between traveling with baseball leading up to the spring game. And there's a ton of belief in Garrett Nussmeier. And I think he didn't do anything to sway that belief at all in his performance on Saturday. A couple of touchdown passes. Looked like he had a good handle on managing the offense. And it always has come down for me and really talking to Coach Kelly that it's decision-making. It's not talent. It's not arm strength. It's making the right decisions on right. When to pull the trigger and when not to pull the trigger. And again, they're working with him on that on a daily basis. I think the VR that benefited Jaden Daniels, the technology to be able to recognize pre-snap, post-snap, and during the play, you know, Garrett's going to take advantage of that this year. I think that will naturally help with decision-making because Jaden said that was what improved his ability. So I think Garrett in the quarterback position is in a good space. Caleb Jackson, I wanted to see him more last year.
Yeah, again, me too.
That's why I'm in the booth and I'm not a coach. But still, I think we're going to see a steady mix of Caleb Jackson. He's just an explosive player that really can beat you in a lot of ways. Not all that dissimilar from a lot of the legendary backs at LSU. He can run by you. He can run over you. And so I like that core of the offense there. And I think the receiving core, well, you know, maybe not coming into the season as highly touted as last year's team, but they've got talent there. I mean, I think Kyron Lacy is poised to have one of those breakout seasons and become the next great LSU receiver that moves on to a successful pro career. So the offense, you know, while I don't think it's going to look a lot like we saw last year, just simply because of the skill set of Jaden, I think they're going to be able to score. I think they'll be effective, and they'll be pretty mixed run right. to pass. The defense, I think there's a lot more energy, I'll be honest with you. I think that, you know, the new defensive coordinator certainly has provided that because he's one of those guys that gets out there and he's fiery and he gets in your face and You know, and there's still question marks on trying to build the depth at the secondary position. But I think they've made strides forward just watching them, you know, over the last several weeks in spring football. So, you know, it's a difficult schedule, but just like baseball, it's LSU and it's SEC. So, I mean, it's going to be difficult every year. You get both Texas and Oklahoma in their first years, one at home, one on the road. But, you know, I think they're in a good spot. And, you know, one of the things I've learned being around Coach Kelly and his system and the people that he surrounded himself with, there's nobody working harder or more efficient to make this football team the product that we all want to see. And so I think they're headed in the right direction. And, you know, after two 10-win seasons, the expectations are certainly going to be there.
Yeah, and you brought up the guys that they're going to have to replace, like Jaden Daniels, Brian Thomas Jr., and Malik Nabers. The draft is coming up very soon, in just a little over a week on the 25th. Do you expect those three guys to go not only just in the first round, but in the top 20?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a possibility. I mean, I think, you know, you hear a lot of talk by those in the know who follow the draft very closely that, you know, Malik Nabers may have been maybe the best pick as a wide receiver. Now, you still look at some of the mock draft boards, and he's not the first receiver taken, obviously. But I almost get a sense that there's a lot of front offices saying, we kind of hope he doesn't because we're going to have a shot to get him. I think everybody wants to get his services. And Jaden Daniels goes without saying. I mean, will he be the first pick? Maybe not. But, I mean, you know, when I think about it, I look at those three guys, and I think they are certainly capable of all going, as you say, not only in the first round, but fairly high in the first round. I mean, all you have to do is put on the videotape. And then I think Malik Nabers, to his credit, what he did on Pro Day was, I mean, not that people were surprised that he was a great talent, but I think they maybe discovered that, wow, he's maybe even better than we thought he was just watching his game film. But, yeah, I think all three have a chance to really get in some good situations and find themselves in generational wealth here in a couple of days.
Well, Chris, we appreciate your time. I want to thank you for stopping by and joining the call tonight. You'll be heard on our airwaves, and we look forward to talking to you again soon.
Well, I'm glad you guys, again, I want to say, I'm glad you came to Baton Rouge. You're always welcome over here, and anything I can do, because I appreciate all that you and the station do, not only to cover the games, but promoting LSU, because I know that's a fine line based on where you are. You've got a lot of schools that you got to cover and give promotion for, which they deserve, just like LSU. So the fact that you guys do it for us on a year-long basis, I appreciate. So from all of us at LSU Athletics, thanks for being here and thanks for doing what you do.
All right, thank you. That's Chris Blair, their voice of the LSU Tigers. We got to take a timeout. When we come back, more RP3 D'Lo and Mesh live from Plucker's Wing Bar.
Go check out our YouTube channel at @ESPN_SWLA. For the latest episodes of Miguez Mindset, Over Par, and so much more. That's ESPN Southwest Louisiana Sports Station on YouTube.
Welcome back into RP3 D'Lo and Mesh as we're broadcasting live from Plucker's Wing Bar here on Nicholson, just down the street from Alex Box Stadium. We've had a tremendous show, not one, not two, not three, not four, but five guests.
Whole handful.
Had a whole all-star lineup there of guests. Hey, want to let you know about what's going on over here at Plucker's. They got a new sauce. It's Breggy's Creole Crush. That's right. Alex Bregman, former LSU Tiger great, two-time World Series champion with the Houston Astros. He's collaborated with Plucker's Wing Bar on a new sauce. It says here, it tastes like a home run.
It does say that.
It says it right there. Little alligator's telling me it tastes like a home run. I'm going to try it later on today when we have lunch. So they got Breggy's new sauce, the Breggy's Creole Crush. You got to try that out when you're in town. Also, sports trivia every Tuesday at 8:30 with host Hunt Palmer.
Which will be tonight.
That'll be tonight. And then they have general trivia every Wednesday, 7:30 on Blue Bonnet, and then 8 o'clock here on Nicholson. This week, by the way, is Taylor Swift week. So if you have any Swifties in the family like I do, my 9-year-old is obsessed with her, there'd be a good time to come out and take part in the trivia. You can win gift cards as well. They also got a great drink special today, $1 off Mexican bottled beers and margaritas. So if you're in town for the Cajuns Tigers softball game, or if you're coming over for the LSU baseball game versus UNO, you can take advantage of that. And then next Thursday, the 25th, that's the first round of the NFL draft. Yeah, it creeped up on you. They're going to be having an interactive NFL draft party drink and food specials for all 32 picks. And if you're a diehard baseball fan like I am, guess what? They got MLB Extra Innings package here in the bar and in the restaurant. Fans of any MLB team can watch their favorite teams all season long. So if you're going to be here in BR, make sure to stop by Plucker's Wing Bar here on Nicholson. We do have a poll question of the day. We haven't been able to talk a lot about it, and it's about the big marquee matchup on the softball diamond that's going to happen at Tiger Park. 6 o'clock is going to be first pitch between Cajuns Tigers. It's a rematch of last year's NCAA regional, which the Cajuns ended up rallying to win. Both of these teams are strong in the RPI. Both of these teams, a win could help solidify things. For the Cajuns, it could help possibly propel them to a spot to be able to be a host for regional if they continue to take care of business. They just took 2 of 3 from a top 20 ranked Texas State team on the road in San Marvelous this past weekend. For the LSU, well, perspective, guess what? They're looking at a national seed. They're firmly in place, so a win over a quality RPI opponent could help kind of secure that as well, as the Tigers are somewhat struggling in SEC play, right? They're only 10-8 overall. So they've kind of cooled off a little bit when it comes to SEC play. So it's a marquee matchup. And our poll question of the day, James Mess, is who do you got? Is it the Tigers or is it the Cajuns tonight at Tiger Park?
Absolutely. And early on in the votes, it was actually a 50-50 split. But as we've gotten into the show more and more, LSU is now leading the votes at 58%, which means the Louisiana Raging Cajuns are at 42%, still waiting for our first comments.
And it should be interesting, too. We spoke with Beth Tarina, LSU head coach at the end hour number one, and she mentioned it. A lot of left-handers in the lineup, like Taylor Pleasance and Chloe Riaceto, one of the Cajuns' better left-handed pitchers. Maybe they'll counter with her tonight. We'll see if they go with her or Sam Landry from the LSU side of things as well. Dealing with some of the injuries they've had, I kind of asked Coach Tarina about it. Danica Coffey, who's now out for the year, who was off to such a great start. They've found ways to rally despite her being gone, and they have, 10-8 in the SEC with how, you know, brutal that schedule is. They're still in a really good spot, and if they get a couple more series win, they got a big one coming up against Tennessee, then they're going to accomplish the things that they want to down the stretch, and we'll see if tonight is, a big statement win on one side or the other. I expect it to be a pretty competitive game. You know, it's always going to be a nice crowd when those two get together. I'm sure a lot of Cajuns fans will make the short drive, as we did this morning, and I'm sure the Tiger fans will show up as well. So it should be a lot of fun, just like those regionals always are.
Should be a lot of fun. You know, we touched on our specials. We talked about Angel Reese being selected number 7 overall in the WNBA draft last night. And look, I'll say it again. It's the perfect place for her. Two reasons. One, she's not their first pick in the first round. They took Cardoza from South Carolina. Okay, obviously the Chicago Sky are looking at solidifying and improving their post game by being able, which they needed desperately. They're getting not one but two great rebounders. Angel Reese may be one of the best rebounders I've seen in the women's game. And I'll say this to Tiger fans. Some of them are upset. How did she fall to 7? She fell to 7 because she needs to develop a jump shot. She doesn't have one, right? Angel Reese is a beast at rebounding the basketball. Shooting the basketball, not so much, right? And what's perfect for her by going to a team like this, she's not going to be the face of the franchise. She's going to be part of a rebuild. So she's not going to have that pressure. And I love the fact that she gets to go play for Teaspoon. I'll say it again. Teresa Weatherspoon is one of the most physical and intense women's basketball players the state has ever produced. She played at Louisiana Tech, was an All-American there. She's in the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame for a reason. And by the way, she was coached by, wait for it, Kim Mulkey as an assistant coach down there, or up there rather, in Ruston. And now Angel Reese is going to be coached by another Naismith Basketball Hall of Famer with ties to Louisiana Tech. Teaspoon, who helped the Pelicans get tougher and better, she is going to help Angel Reese's development as a pro. She's going to make her tougher, both mentally and physically. And I can guarantee you, she's going to have her be working on a jump shot.
And you know what's interesting, Ray? You bring up the fact that she is one of the best rebounders that we've seen in the women's game, which also means that she's really good at putting the ball back and getting put back layups.
Correct.
I am curious, even if you don't develop like a mid-range jump shot, she also doesn't really have a lot of post moves for the most part. It's more of just kind of grabbing the ball, being taller than everyone else, and then just putting it back for an easy layup.
And she has that interesting form, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like a over the top, right, kind of off to the side.
She uses her long wingspan to get around to
absolutely
be able to get the putback.
What I'm thinking is if she can develop a spin move off of the paint, like,
ooh,
that's going to be dangerous. That's going to be something that's pretty lethal.
She doesn't need to have the outside shooting of Caitlin Clark, right?
She
just needs to develop an offensive shot that can add to – she just needs to be able to develop something that's going to allow her to score in more than just putbacks.
Yeah, and it will be interesting to see. Again, the talent level is going to go up, obviously, and there's going to be a lot more teams that match her physicality levels, where there was a lot of teams at LSU played that just didn't have any answer in that regard. So I will be fascinated to see how that goes. I'll tell you what, guys, we got to take our final time out of the day. But I got something for you on the other side of the break.
Ooh,
there's a former top prospect getting called up for the Astros.
I saw this.
That you may have forgotten about. And I'll remind you of who he is, what his stature is, and what kind of impact this could have on the Stros as we close out today's show on the other side of the break. Stay with us.
Let your voice be heard. Give us a call on the Mike's Marine Hotline at 337-706-0111. Brought to you by Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water. So speak your mind and call the hotline. 337-706-0111. This is ESPN, 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Welcome back into RP3, D'Lo and Mesh. We are wrapping up today's edition of the show live from Plucker's Wing Bar here in Baton Rouge. I mentioned it before the break. The Astros have called up a former top prospect. It is Forrest Whitley. You may remember Whitley's story a bit, and if you don't, I'll try and jog your memory. 17th overall selection in the 2016 MLB draft. Of course, that's right when the Astros were really starting to piece things together, starting to improve with their play on the field. And Whitley was thought of as this really talented high school pitcher who might add some long-term stability to the rotation once he made it up. He was interested in playing baseball for Florida State University with my Seminoles, but instead he decided to sign with the Astros, and since then it has been a rocky road to say the least. He struggled early on in the lower levels of the minors, and then in 2018 he got that 50-game suspension for violating the MLB's drug prevention and treatment program. Of course, that's with PEDs and things of that nature. Since then he kind of battled his way back. He had UCL surgery, Tommy John. He's just undergone a ton. But at 26 years of age, last year he ended up having some more injury issues that kind of put him on the shelf. But he comes back now at age 26, and the Astros are desperate to find arms. So he kind of is a beneficiary of that situation, and he'll get called up. Look, he's struggled even at the highest levels of the minor leagues in AAA in the past couple of seasons. It has never been a smooth road for Forrest. So my expectations for him are not even that high as a guy like Spencer Arrighetti, who, by the way, pitched against RP3's Braves last night. Battled through four innings. Remember my wish list, right? We had four innings for every pitcher, no more than five runs in an inning.
That's correct.
Winning one game. Well, they didn't check off the win one game in the series box, but Arrighetti gave him four gritty innings. He only gave up two runs, much better than his first start. They didn't give up more than five in an inning, although Josh Hader tried to at the end. And obviously they'll still be going for the win tonight and tomorrow to round out the series. But so far, they've kept my checklist alive, and your Braves got themselves a nice little victory last night.
They did. They got themselves a nice little victory. The Astros helped them in that regard with some defensive, we'll call them miscues. Not their strongest. And once again, Minute Maid Park is proving to be not a great place for the Astros yet again. I know they took two or three from Texas over the weekend, but not a great way to start off with. And then you're going to have Hunter. We're going to have Brown pitch tonight.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Let's
see how that goes. That's how I'll
Hunter
say
Brown
that.
Did not have a good outing the last time.
And he only has to go against, of course, you guys just find these guys. Now, Ronaldo Lopez, about the 30-year-old right-hander, career ERA over four. But this season, how about a .75 ERA and 11 strikeouts in 12 innings? So we'll see if the Astros can turn the fortunes on Lopez. I want to thank all of our guests for coming out to Pluckers. Ooh. Four of them live. Beth Tarina via the phone. Was a lot of fun.
It was a ton of fun. We appreciate Pluckers for letting us come out and do our show here today. Yeah, look, they got tons of stuff going on. Great drink specials, trivia, so much more. So if you're in town, make sure to swing by. If you're coming over for tonight's Cajun softball game versus the Tigers or for the LSU baseball game, come over, stop off at Pluckers, and you will not regret it. That's going to do it for us. We'll be back inside the EFCO Development Studios tomorrow. But coming up next, live from Plucker's Wing Bar is our guy, Jordy Holtberg. That's right, the blonde bomber.
He's like
is going to be here.
Sauces over there. I don't even know what he's doing.
Look, when you are an LSU legend, you can try all the sauces you want. I mean, that's the treatment you get here.